All right, welcome to the Outsiders, episode 11. We have a special guest in from the top rope, Mr. Turner Novak, fresh off of a banana boat. What's going on, man?
Oh, he's muted.
Turner, you're on mute. You're on mute.
It'd like be fun if he was miming.
You're on mute again.
No, you gotta
one more time.
Click the
one
little
time.
Microphone can with a me? Line through it. Yeah, that's yeah. how this works.
Yeah, sorry. I'm 83 years old. I've never used a computer before. So, but yeah, thank you for having me. There's a lot going on, but yeah, excited to be here.
Yeah, for sure. Well, do you want to go ahead and do our advertiser read for today? Are you prepared for that still?
Yeah. It's the same one, right?
Yeah. The one you did before in the pre-show. Let's hear it.
I can't do it.
I can't do it.
Okay, go ahead, Baki. Chris, do it. You could do it.
All right, this episode is sponsored by one of our favorite banks straight out of the San Francisco Bay Area, Silicon Valley Bank, a trusted banking partner for the last 40 years for thousands of venture capitalists and startups worldwide. FDI insured for over 250,000. So definitely don't put more than 250,000 in, but as long as you're right under that, you are good to go. Silicon Valley Bank, thanks for sponsoring today's episode.
Well,
that's all we're going
to
talk
we'll
about
have to
today.
Edit that
that's
out.
It. That, and we need to promote the hell out of Turner. That's what matters. Like, who cares about Silicon Valley Bank? This is all about promoting the hell out of Turner. But let me give you a, since you talked about FDIC, Chris, let me tell you about the magnitude of what's going on. So Silicon Valley Bank has $173 billion in deposits at the end of 2022. What percentage of those, or how much of that do you think is uninsured? Like, what's your best guess?
93%.
I already know the answer.
$152 billion out of $173. $152 billion.
Is that math right? What's 152 divided by
this is a podcast. There's no math here, bro.
I'm close. 78%.
Yeah, they have a lot of public company customers, I believe. So there's probably a lot of probably more exposure there than in the private markets, honestly.
Wow.
I think I got, you know, I've managed... and managed a couple of venture capital portfolios. I think I got six different texts from people this morning with exposure. Like this, like it kind of shocked me that they did the FDIC thing because I don't know that they realize how integral this bank is to an entire segment of the economy. Like I have it's friends huge. Texting me literally who are like, not sure if I'm getting paid next week because my company has $35 million at Silicon Valley Bank, and we can't make payroll on Tuesday unless if it gets chopped down to 250,000. So anyway, that's the preamble about how terrible this is. And I don't think most people realize like the tendrils of this thing.
No, this is like the most unprecedented thing that could have happened to start off 2023. Like people have been predicting Silicon Valley's bank's insolvency for a while, but like it only mattered if a bank run happened, and a bank run happened. Like it didn't matter that their bonds were underwater. We could talk about like why all this stuff went down, but like what just happened in the last 24 hours is the most black swan unexpected event, no matter how fucked up their balance sheet was with underwater bonds. And like, this is going to trickle to every startup and tech company in the Valley. I mean, many of them across the world who trusted SVB to do their banking. They were a top 20 bank. People don't know what's going to happen as of Monday. Like under $250,000 accounts will get their money back. Like they're FDIC insured. There's already a new bank set up for it. But everyone else who just raised their Series A's and B's and C's and F's and pre-IPO rounds has no idea if they're going to have access to those funds come next week.
Another question for the panel. How long do you think it's been since we last had a bank fail in the United States? How many years?
2008, right?
It's been, I thought it was 2020. It's been like
2020,
2 years.
868 days. Yeah, it was like the National Bank of like Topeka or something. Like some killer
part
thing. Like
you're one
like,
of the greats.
Really? National
Bank
of
Topeka. Well, let's talk about what happened. I feel like, you know, the next 20 minutes of this episode are talking about a bank collapse, which is fucking unbelievable. Like I did not expect that we would be repeating 2008 in 2023. Like, no one told me we needed to have another Great Depression to have the Roaring Twenties, and yet here we are. So for those of you who missed the news this morning and don't work in tech and listen to this podcast, which I think like the Venn diagram there is probably pretty small, Silicon Valley Bank, the most prominent tech bank that banks, tech people, venture capitalists, investors, founders, employees, collapsed as of this morning, like legitimately went under, shut down. FDIC took over. They're going to have to figure out who to sell the bank to over the weekend and hopefully be able to make depositors whole come next week. In the last 24 hours, what happened was Silicon Valley Bank issued a press release. They had bonds that were underwater. They were selling those available for sale bonds at a $1.8 billion loss. And in order to make up for having more capital on the balance sheet, they were raising money from General Atlantic. Like, this is a pretty common practice in the banking industry. Like, sometimes your investments don't go as planned. In this case, they were holding on to 10-year held to maturity bonds at like 1.5% yield. As we know, that those bonds are underwater right now when yield is way more than 1.5%. And so they were selling their available for sale bonds. And this led to basically mass panic inside the venture capital community, where investors and founders and everyone started pinging each other. Hey, is Silicon Valley Bank insolvent? Do we need to take our money out of the bank? And so now you have a bank that has billions and billions. I don't know the exact figure, Michael. What is it? $290 billion worth of deposits or something like that sitting in the bank. And it's just pummeling. Over the last 2 days, founders and large tech companies are pulling out their funds. They're moving it over to different banks like JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. And fast forward, the stock price of Silicon Valley Bank dropped 60% overnight, another 30% in pre-market trading this morning. Ultimately, they had to halt the stock. The government took it over, and now no one knows what's going to happen next, besides at least initial FDIC insured accounts are going to be made whole. So that is, it's a bit of a PR crisis. Like, it's funny because this whole thing could have been avoided with better PR, I think, explaining why they were raising additional capital, why the bonds were underwater, what was actually happening, that the bank was insolvent, maybe not announcing that you have underwater bonds the same day that another bank goes out of business is probably not the best strategy. So a lot of this could have been avoided with good communication. And of course, like, more sound investment decisions, but yet here we are.
Well, I think somebody said it well, which is like, this is the only industry that this could have happened to, because you have 100% of the customer base who's sitting on Twitter all day long. Like, in any other industry, all the CEOs aren't talking to one another, right? So it's like, in terms of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that it takes to actually have a bank run happen in 2023, like, this might be the last remaining industry where, like, you can actually hear from all of these customers basically in real time, and they're publicly freaking out, publicly like spreading this FUD, and then other customers are like actually taking action and moving all their funds out. It's pretty unbelievable. Yep.
So two more data points about the magnitude of what's going on. So deposits like 198 billion a year ago, March. It's gone way down since then to 165. They had a chief risk officer. Do you guys know that they have a chief risk officer?
The
chief
Not
risk
anymore. Officer.
Yeah, left in April 2022, and they hired a new person in January 2023. It's basically like they invite you to the Death Star, and they're like, yeah, just check on these plants. It'll be fine. Nobody can shoot the Death Star. Like, it's impossible. So then you like show up, and that's your first day on the job in January. Those are the two data points that I was like, oh my God. And then here's the thing that's the scariest thing. Silicon Valley Bank is the 16th largest bank in the United States. And the regulators never deemed it was large enough to be considered a large bank, so it got relaxed liquidity requirements.
Yeah, you have to have above $700 billion in assets in order to be considered a large enough bank where the government will regulate your bond investing. If you're under that threshold, which Silicon Valley Bank was by $400 billion in assets, they get to do all these things, and like, everyone looks the other way, and like, government doesn't step in and care, because technically on paper they were a medium-sized bank, not a large bank.
So Turner, I guess what percentage, or you may not know, but I guess what percentage of your portfolio at Banana would you say has like exposure to SVB?
Yeah, it's hard. I'm still kind of trying to understand that, honestly, just because this is kind of all happening in the last 48 hours. It's actually probably smaller than you would think. SVB's process is a little bit more difficult than some of the tech-enabled software-first type banks. So since we're mostly at Banana investing in like super, super early-stage startups, they just don't have time to wait a couple days, go into a branch out of an account, et cetera. So I think our exposure, like at a portfolio company level, we definitely have people. I have a couple founders that have, they're like, yeah, we have all our deposits there, majority there. Some of them have been able to get them out. Some of them haven't. A lot of people that just don't have SVB at all, just because they're like, oh, we signed up for this other bank because it was just way easier to sign up. We didn't like SVB's website. We like certain products that we got from these other banks. So like I was saying earlier, I mean, it seems like it's probably more like, it seems like the bulk of their customer base is companies that raise venture debt, where you get, you know, I don't know the nuances of venture debt high level. I've never taken it out, so I don't know exactly how it works, but there's covenants basically require you to keep deposits there. So I think that's a decent amount of the customer base. And then also public companies that, you know, just have like $6 billion in cash on the balance sheet. Like they're one company like that is like the entire startup community. So I think a pretty large percentage of their deposits are actually pretty large publicly traded companies. So yeah, some exposure for sure. At a fund level, we don't have any there, but I know I do have friends that have funds that have deposits at SVB. So like Alex was saying, pretty wide ramifications. I just don't even think we know how far it will go yet.
And the venture debt piece is crazy because, you know, my understanding is they're going to accelerate a lot of that venture debt. So like the way, as a founder, the way that I kind of was exposed to SVB was a lot of our VCs who predominantly are doing later stage rounds coming to seed stage companies like mine and saying, hey, you're eligible to get this like $5 million line of venture debt. It's pretty low risk. And like, this is where it becomes high risk, which my understanding is in order to now get your deposits out, you're going to have to pay down or pay off that, you know, line of venture debt where, you know, you have founders out there. I have friends in text groups that were expecting to pay that down over several years. And now they're saying, hey, you need to come up with this $5 million, you know, to pay this down before you can even get your $250,000 out. And so the number of companies, I think, big and small, if that's the case, right, who are going to be affected by like the debt products that SVB offered is going to be astronomical. And I think that's one of those like downstage ramifications that I don't think we've even, you know, been hearing about on Twitter today.
There's another SVB tendril that people don't know about that much, which is SVB is actually a huge LP in a lot of mid-stage venture funds. And because they are, that was part of their cycle, right? Like we make money here, we get the in on venture debt. The people we invest with as LPs will be the GPs who are on boards who bring us in for venture debt. So like that tendril like goes all the way in to where it's like, oh, like not only, you know, do you have situations where the venture capital businesses are exposed to SVB and potentially, Chris, what you're talking about, where that debt could get called and it's like, well, okay, we're insolvent. See you later. Like the funds that invested in those companies, they have as an LP now an insolvent bank. Like,
I do think that some of those relationships are pretty valuable. I mean, what do you pay for an LP stake in Sequoia?
Yeah.
Redpoint. I don't know. I'm just kind of going down the list of the top funds. They can probably get most of that bought pretty close to par. I mean, obviously, the market value of some of those positions and funds could be all over the place based on valuations and stuff. But I don't know. I think they'll be able to sell those. Like my guess is you probably sell the asset management business.
But they're not just in Sequoia and A16Z.
No, many others. Yeah.
Jack and Jim's shitty Philadelphia venture capital fund. No offense to all the Philadelphia venture capitalists, but you guys are definitely better than the San Antonio VCs, I can tell, or at least in this case.
Well, but, they're also investors in a lot of the late stage rounds. Like when you need equity and debt financing and you're a growth stage company with questionable financials and good growth and capital intensive, like SVB is your saver, was your saver. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see which bank wants to, if they do end up being acquired, wants to take on all of these assets, which are decently risky. Like, look, they gave me a 3.25% mortgage rate 3 months ago. And so they very clearly are like not good at making money, but they were not good at making money. And like, it'll be interesting to see who wants to acquire that portfolio.
Well, now Alex has a free house, which is great. That's amazing.
I hope so.
Congratulations.
I hope so. If any of the listeners know how I can like finesse this whole terrible thing into a free house, like please slide into my DMs later today.
internet, do your thing.
But it was crazy. Like I was in 5 or 6 group chats, email chains, Slack groups that were all going off this morning. Like people not knowing where their funds were, if they were going to make payroll, like what was going to happen next. And it's still happening. Like I'm still in the email chains that are going because honestly, like we can't panic until Monday. Monday will kind of be the reckoning day where we see if they got sold over the weekend and if something will happen that's better than trying to just like sell off assets and pay these dividends to depositors over the next decade. Cause like it could take 10 to 14 years, which is what happened. I think Lehman Brothers took like 14 years to finally pay out everything from asset sales. And like growth stage capital intensive startups barely have 4 months, let alone 14 years to sit around and wait to be made whole. And so this is going to just slow down. This puts another dagger into the heart of the startup world and early stage investing community. Now, after months of interest rates rising and investors pulling back and waiting and growth stage market sort of collapsing, this is just another stab in the heart.
Isn't it crazy like how fast goodwill can evaporate in an industry? I think that's what's shocking to me is it's like, you know, they and I don't know all the details, but like to their customers, they weren't a bad actor, right? They like there's these like third party service companies. There's like Auric in the legal world, there's SVB and you know, a bunch of others in sort of the banking world who just dominate like the services industry. And so for 40 years, like, you know, if you go on Twitter, you read all these stories from like major GPs at huge funds and LPs and, you know, CEOs who have worked with like SVB for, you know, 25 years. I think Chad Hurley from YouTube was talking about like all the great things that he's done. And like at the end of the day, none of that matters if like the collective hive mind just decides like, nope, these guys are out or like these guys are scary or we have cash at risk. And I think like VCs were in a really tough spot advising their portfolio where like, even if you've had an incredible 40-year relationship with Silicon Valley Bank, the correct advice is to tell your portfolio founders, like, best case scenario, your money's still there on Monday, but worst case scenario, it's not. So you better move your money to a bank where you can't have that worst case scenario. So like all of this shit around like goodwill and sort of all of the like things that these services companies do to like build relationships with their customers, I think it proves that like none of that stuff actually matters when, you know, when push comes to shove.
And the most ironic thing about all of this is that it's not like this was hidden data for the last year. Like these numbers and these investments have been on the books of Silicon Valley Bank for the last year and a half. They're available in public records. They're a public company. Like they're available in their public filings. And yet the harsh reality is like 99% of venture capitalists don't know how to read a balance sheet to begin with. And so the only time they freak out is when it's a consensus reason to freak out. And like it's the shared sentiment. When it's a tweet. Like if they actually cared a year ago, someone would have looked at the bond investments that Silicon Valley Bank was making. Like one of the firms would have said, hey, this is a pretty fucking shitty idea to go buy bonds with a yield of 1.5%. You have to believe that rates are not rising at all in the next 10 years. But no, the average venture capitalist doesn't know how to read Silicon Valley Bank's balance sheet and make that assessment. And now the only reason they do is because the market had that consensus decision making.
Managed honeybees are a vital component of the American food supply chain. Without honeybees, many crops we love, such as almonds, berries, and apples, produce less yield. But beekeepers need land to place their hives and grow their businesses. And with many new beekeepers located in suburbs and cities, it's a challenge. Landowners may have plenty of empty land, but haven't considered it for agricultural use or thought about the monetary and environmental benefits it could provide. This is where Lease Honey comes in. Lease Honey helps those with a bona fide agricultural business find the land and resources to grow while helping real estate owners save money on their real estate taxes. Visit leasehoney.com to learn more about finding land for your agricultural business or about saving money on your real estate taxes through agriculture.
I love how Turner graces us and does us a huge favor by coming on our pod. And then the first 10 minutes are like, hey, Turner, you know who's stupid? Venture capitalists. That's the whole pod so far.
It's been good so far. I'm glad I can be the shock absorber for all the detention.
Oh, that's good, because usually I spend the whole thing questioning Alex's life decisions, making fun of his Peloton, which he sold because I beat him up so much. Yeah, look at it's gone.
I know. Well, I wasn't riding it anymore.
Things are not going great in tech right now.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a fire sale at Alex's house.
Yeah.
Turner can't afford artwork and hasn't for like a year and a half in the background. Yeah. Alex had to sell his Peloton. I'm selling books on, you know, eBay right now from my collection. It's a sad state of affairs here. So
joke's on me. My mortgage is with Silicon Valley Bank. My personal checking's with Silicon Valley Bank. So clearly I don't know how to make proper financial decisions either.
Don't worry, dude. We know you're way under the FDIC limit.
That's true though.
So, okay, Turner, I have two questions for you. First one, is that a picture frame behind you that still has the original thing in it from when you buy it at Target? Is that what's going on there? Okay, legit. Totally cool with that.
No, it's an NFT, actually.
Dear God.
No, I just have never, I've never actually put something in the frame. I just haven't had time. Just, I don't know. I don't have an excuse.
It takes like 30 seconds.
I know. I don't have an excuse.
You go online. You order a print. You know the back like comes off with little push pins.
Oh, yeah. I know. I'm pretty sure it's crooked on the wall, too. Hold on. Let me look.
Look. It's okay, like, man. No, we know you're a busy VC reading Wikipedia, how to read
reading a balance sheets.
We know we got you. But okay, so here's the more serious question. So you're a VC. Let's say hypothetically one with portfolio company exposure to Silicon Valley Bank. Like, what are you telling companies right now? Like, what do they need to do? Because it's Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. The wire deadline's already hit for East Coast. Like, what do these people need to do between now and payroll on Tuesday?
Yeah. I mean, I think you probably, if I was the CEO of a company right now, I'd just be pretty transparent with my employees and just say, this is what's going on. Walk through what you understand. Explain, get employees. If you had payroll that was due that you didn't run, just say, obviously we can't run payroll yet. The way that I understand that it's working is, I mean, I think that the FDIC realizes how urgent this is. And from what I've kind of heard, like everyone's in group chats and email chains, it seems like this will probably move relatively quickly and they'll try to get things settled as quick as possible. From what I've heard from on the FDIC side, I think they're people with liquidity issues due to like SVB concentration. I think they're considering and probably going to give like advances on some of the recovery funds, if like selling off assets and recovering deposits if needed, to just like help shock absorb some of that stuff. And then yeah, I guess if I'm trying to like I have a couple of portfolio companies that do have balances there, so just kind of talking through trying to introduce them to other banking partners that they could work with. I've had that a couple times today, and then yesterday too. Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to really do anything right now going into the weekend. I think we just kind of have to wait to see what happens. I personally, like what I'm saying is, I think the worst case scenario is probably a little bit better than the doom and gloom that you might be predicting based on what you're seeing, I guess.
What does that mean specifically? I'm sorry, could you explain that like I'm bald and from San Antonio?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's not like these deposits don't exist. Like, it's not like this is crypto where they're gone. Like, the deposits are there and the assets, like if you look at Silicon Valley Bank's balance sheet, like some of their investor relations material, I think that there's actually value in the bank. There's interest. There's real deposits that are there. It's not like there's no money to be given out. It's not like the FDIC won't be able to recover things. It just might take a little while. Like, it might take, like to Alex's point, 15 years, or Chris, I forget who said it, you know, 15 years to settle this stuff. I don't think it will take that long. And I think you can always sell some of these assets like at a discount quicker to like, and you can, there'll probably be people that prop up that are like providing liquidity if you need like short-term meeting payroll, stuff like that. I believe in like, I think the startup ecosystem and like the tech community will like work to get through this. So I just don't think the worst case scenario is actually as bad as you would think just on paper.
I agree with that. I mean, when you look at like the last 100 years since the Great Depression, I don't think there's been really any major cases where a bank went under and depositors were not made whole. Like equity holders are fucked in any case. Like stocks at zero. If you own stock now in First Republic Bank or Silicon Valley Bank or any of the other regional public banks, like that's your equity. That's the decision and bet that you made. Depositors, though, I think there's a very, very high likelihood that everyone is made whole, at least on a deposits basis. I don't know what happens with like the debt and things like that. But I would be really surprised if we don't see depositors made whole. But it is a really challenging, stressful situation because you have to make payroll and you have to pay your vendors and you have rent and you have all these like people that were like hundreds of thousands of employees that rely on getting paid from deposits that are sitting or were sitting in Silicon Valley Bank. And that's probably the biggest, most stressful piece of it all is just like not having access to those funds. I think this is going to cause a pretty interesting, dramatic shift in venture capital where like now VCs will probably ask founders who their banking partners are. Like it's going to be really difficult, I think, for a lot of challenger banks to grow. And like it used to be, oh, we're taking on SVB or First Republic. Like that's probably not the best pitch anymore after the last 24 hours. And so there's just going to be some really interesting ramifications, a lot more focus on treasury management. I think we're in for some like really fascinating just operational changes to startups.
Why in 2023 is there not a company that you can take a non-FDIC insured amount of money, call it $10 million, and it just splits it across a bunch of banks so that all of the money is FDIC insured? Like the only reason that people don't do this is because you have to go like manually open bank accounts. Maybe there is a company that does this and we can plug them now, but that seems like a very obvious idea, right?
So historically, no one cared was the problem. Everyone was like, ah, oh, fuck it. Like if you care about earning 3% yield on your like cash, like you just like, you're not focusing on your business. It's a distraction. Now everyone's going to have to care. So there's been a lot of companies that have tried this and ultimately like didn't get traction because it was just, they were too early. There is a company called Meow. Like, you know, I'm not joking. Like that's the name. This is not a shit post. Like they're called meow.co. And it literally is like automated treasury bill custodian services that earn like 5% interest. And like they do that automatic transfer and division between accounts. And I don't know if they keep it all under the make sure to double check. But I do believe that like everything's in FDIC insured accounts and you just have multiple of them. I think now will definitely be the right timing where this stuff happens. And the only reason I know about this is because for the last 24 hours, VCs have been shilling their portfolio companies on Twitter in the light of the demise of SVB. It was like an opportunity for customer acquisition. So I don't know. I learned about it, but at what cost?
Look, here's the other lesson from that. Like you have to have a name for your company that reflects the brand. And if you want to be a trusted partner in finance, you do not name your company Meow. Like that's like a Hello Kitty e-commerce store should be called that. Not your freaking treasury management platform that, you know, it's gotta be rock solid. Like it needs to be.
I had to disclaim it.
No, I'm complaining about them. They should call me for this. I will not charge them much, $10,000 an hour, and I will tell them, don't be stupid. And that will only cost them like $200 to hear that sentence. Because that's the dumbest name for a startup ever. No offense. Oh, wait, we're supposed to be more positive, right? I'm sorry. I love the world. It's great.
That's what I'm saying, though, is I had to add a disclaimer to that like, this is not a shitpost company. It's actually called Meow. The fact that I had to do that is like...
Look, it's called Meow. It's called Meow because they pivoted from crypto. It was crypto treasury management. That was the V1 of the company. V2 is real money management. But it's still called Meow. Sorry.
So we can't end this episode without a Girdly Galaxy Brain take on this entire situation. So I'd like to hear some Girdly Galaxy Brain music or sound effects followed by a take.
Turner, this is the best part of Riverside, by the way, is you can add sound effects like this. It's like included.
Nice.
Me, by the way, Riverside, you should check out this startup when you have a chance. It is the...
Oh, I've used it, yeah.
I don't know how this... I have no idea how this company's in business. Like, they are investing so much in features, and it's like $25 a month for a... And the TAM is people that make podcasts. Like, Like, what?
So just like every tech person, basically. Every VC,
I have no idea how they're still in business. I'm waiting for the moment when I log in. They're like, sorry, we went out of business. But
well, it might be anyway, soon if they were banking with Silicon Valley. So
yeah, it might be Monday. I don't know. I don't really have a Gridley Galaxy brain take on all this. Like, I mean, I did want to talk about the dichotomy of Twitter VC takes on this whole thing. Like, there's the point that are like, Silicon Valley is like a great partner and we need to stand by them. And then there's the ones in the background that are like, get the hell out of here. The house is on fire. Take your money out. So I don't know. What does that, do we even care? Do we even care? Turner, do we even care what venture capitalists think?
You probably shouldn't. if we've learned anything over the last, I don't even know how far back we want to go. they're very right sometimes about some things, and they're also very wrong sometimes about a lot of things. So
my buddy, by the way, who has nearly $1 million of his personal money sitting in a bank account at Silicon Valley Bank, is mad because he didn't think to get out, and he sent me the great and super intelligent Mark Susters thread about keeping your money at Silicon Valley Bank. And I texted back to him. I was like, $10 if you ask him if he's the same guy who wrote the 89-page public memo about how Bird has SaaS economics. And he didn't do it. he did that. I don't know if you guys remember that. Like, he wrote a very impassioned plea about the moat of Bird scooters. And interesting. The only moat they found is when people throw them in the San Antonio River. So, oh, sorry. Hold on.
Hey, that's great.
Sorry.
I think the most wild part about this is they made one single $80 billion purchase of, when you talk about the 1 point whatever percentage, yeah. It wasn't even like it was staged over different securities. Like, it was literally one massive bet. So whatever percent, I'm a VC. I don't read balance sheets for fun, but like I pulled it up really quick a couple of days ago and I was looking at this stuff. Like, that's a pretty high percentage trade. That's, I think, the part that blows my mind the most is, like, that was the decision that was made. Just one massive purchase. Yeah. Like,
well, deposits had skyrocketed out of control and they weren't making any yield on them. So I understand sort of the inclination to say, hey, let's go do something and make at least some money. But to lock it up in a 10-year bet, you have to just, like, and all signs pointed to, we can't live in a zero interest rate phenomenon environment forever. So, like, yeah, really, really poor risk management. Maybe that's why their head of risk quit and the new head of risk was watering plants all day. But, like, you just, you know, terrible investment decision. I agree. You have to wonder, like, what those people were doing or thinking at the time. And, like, if I had a wager, I'd bet the same level of mediocrity exists at every other bank. We just don't see it because they're so large and a bit more regulated than only the 17th largest bank in the world.
Well, this was done when they did not have a head of risk and the regulators let them do it. So, like, and then now the regulators have decided the best way to save the bank is to destroy the bank first and then see if anybody wants to save it. Like,
yeah, that is an interesting, yeah, that is, this has been a weird sequencing of events. Like, I'm obviously not like an FDIC regulator, but it seems weird to just, like, let the bank go under before seeing if you can sell off the assets.
Gridley Galaxy brain thing about this, you think the best thing you can do is go to the branch of Silicon Valley Bank or whatever, try to get your money. The best thing you can do is call your state or call your federal representative and your senator and say, get in there and make some phone calls to the FDIC and actually send in the A team to actually fix this. Whoever the B team is that's doing this is not doing
After tweeting mean things at my senators and local representatives for years, I now have to turn to them and beg them to, you know, help me get my money out of SVB. This is tough for a tech guy.
So hold on. Gridley Galaxy brain stuff here. Let me just learn you guys how this works.
Oh, that's the sound. that was
a good one. For Gridley Galaxy brain. By the way, these come for free with Riverside.
That sounds like a jail door is closing and you're getting locked up for securities fraud.
Oh, that's all right. Here, we have the thing for, what is it? Cohen's Mine Court. What did you call yours?
Cohen's Court of Contempt.
Cohen's Court. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, we play that. That's that. Anyway.
You know how they monetize? They charge you every time you press the button. You pay $5 each time you do a sound effect.
Wait, see, I had to pay for
this
that?
This is why you're the VC.
Yeah, I'll tell you all these you crazy know what you ideas. Need to do?
Monetize the sound effects. But anyway, like that's actually the best thing you do. Don't call Silicon Valley Bank. You need to be calling whoever your congressperson is or your senator and telling them this is a problem. And the reality is, like, if you go, have you guys been into one of these offices where these people work and stuff? It is not digital. Like, the phone is still ringing. It's connected into the wall. Like, they look at faxes. Like, do not email. Like, you need to make phone calls, go over, knock on their door. That's how you get their attention. Because somebody will actually answer it. And realistically, somebody's job is to sit there and answer constituent calls. And you say, I am a constituent. Somebody writes it down on a piece of paper and walks that piece of paper over to the desk where the state senator, where the senator or the representative is. That is still how these things operate. It's like it's 2005.
Wild? And you know what's wild is like, if you can imagine, it's not, there's also, there's like a lot of stuff, but I haven't seen anyone talk about transactions in progress right now. Like if you imagine you're a private client of SVB and you're about to close on your home, or get an auto loan or like go to become an LP in a company, like all your shit's locked up. That is crazy. Like I actually think about when we closed on our house in November, could you imagine like a day before close, even we were waiting 9 months to build this house, like your bank just goes fucking under like right before you're about to close on your house. Like I'm sure that that's happened to people this weekend.
What do you think this will do to your Peloton financing? Do you think that'll get worked down or?
Peloton's acquiring SVB's assets.
That's great. Look, I mean, here's the Girdley Galaxy brain thing about this. Like you think about moments that a Warren Buffett or somebody like a Jamie Dimon looks for to go pick up a great franchise, like in terms of what the way Warren talks about stuff. This is a great franchise. This is a really good business. They just screwed up two or three things and then something bad happened to them. But like, if you look at the platform they've built where like every VC firm is on there, like, and the reason you're on there is because every other VC firm is on there. They've got this network of LP relationships. They've got this network of GPs who are pushing their product onto clients, which are very profitable products, by the way. Like, this is a really good business. Mm-hmm. And like the FDIC and this stuff is doing somebody a big favor. And it will shock me, to your point, Turner, if somebody doesn't come in and buy this. Like, you know, JP yeah. Morgan, you know, some of these, and General Atlantic already tried. I think they just didn't have enough money to do it because it's going to require 10 to 20 billion. But like, somebody should do it. It's going to be one of the big banks. And
this could be the group right here. Alex already sold off his Peloton. He's sitting on a mountain of cash. You know,
it's true.
Turner's saved tens of dollars by not purchasing artwork over the last 10 years. I mean, this is a this is a pretty liquid group here. I think we should throw our hat in the ring.
This would be a pretty good investment loan committee. I feel like if we were running SVB, like us four, just approving the new venture debt loans that come through and line of credits for the venture firms.
All we have to do is not go out of business in 24 hours and we've outlasted the current regime. So, you know, it's like a pretty low bar. So I think we could make it, you know, for more than a day.
We can do it. And as all the money that I had raised previously to take over Bed Bath & Beyond is still sitting in my bedroom. So we can use it for this transaction. I thought you rolled that into
a golf cart.
Oh, I did that too.
All right, Turner. Dude, thanks for coming, by the way. We're so glad you're here. You're super smart, entertaining.
Thank you for having me.
How can we support you? I mean, and by the way, do you want me to still keep lobbying you to be the fourth horseman here? Like, should I keep messaging you or do you want me to like slow down maybe every other day as opposed to like every night when I send you love notes?
Yeah. I mean, this is great. Let's see how it goes. See if people liked it. I'm probably not the VC that's going to come in and give you all this pointed expert advice. Just I don't think I'm that smart. I do like talking about this stuff, so it's always fun.
We need somebody who's kind of like a jerk, like the evil person. Mm. Like
it's becoming like, you know me, I think.
Like, no. But it's got to be me because I pick on you all the time. This was the problem.
Well, I just picked on Turner and the entire venture capital community.
I feel like I'm a good scapegoat. I'm a good scapegoat for the VCs because, I mean, you can pick on me and I won't really fight back, right? So it's like a good punching bag.
Do you think you could give us like uneducated takes on geopolitical events? Like, would you be down for that? Like some China and election stuff?
Like, honestly, I don't even follow that stuff close enough to even have an uneducated take. Like, sometimes I don't even know what's going on.
That's perfect for this podcast. That's perfect. Like, that's exactly what we all do.
Like, yeah, is that normal?
That's what our listeners are uneducated, and they want to walk away from this 30 minutes being dumber. 100%. That's what we're going for.
Maybe wow. I'm perfect then.
The other thing is it's turned into a way for Alex to get closer to his friends because they feel like they have to defend him from my attacks.
No, they support your attacks. They're like, Alex, you're cheap as fuck with your Peloton. Girly nailed it on the head is like the text messages that I'm getting.
12 minutes into the first episode, I'm like, you're really cheap. Why are you so cheap?
Yeah. And they're like, dude, that guy figured you out in 12 minutes.
Yeah. Like not spending thousands of dollars on a Peloton or a couple tens of $20 on, like, you know, other things for the office. Can't exactly. Believe people would do that. Yeah.
Art. Such a cheap I need a skate. Plant. Okay. I want to end today's episode. Before I forget, I want to bring back the Glizzy Dog Challenge. If you refer a friend, give us a review, like it, comment, just like engage with the podcast in a way and like send us a screenshot. We'll buy you a Costco hot dog glizzy, $1.50 straight to your Venmo. You might have to give me a few days. My stuff's locked up in SVB, but after that, we'll get you your glizzy hot dog. Just leave us a review or comment or subscribe on Apple or Spotify or Anchor or all the other platforms.
Let's go. And then Turner, you have a killer newsletter. Will you promote that, please?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I've got a newsletter. I write about random stuff that I'm thinking about. It's usually probably related to consumer tech type stuff very broadly. Sometimes we've got some B2B type concepts, fintech type concepts in there, but I invest in and follow a lot of broader consumer focused e-commerce trends, social type things. It's a terrible, there's like 16,000 subscribers, CEOs of some publicly traded companies, some bunch of VCs and reporters, and, you know, I don't know, I can make up some fancy stuff. There's like some smart people that read it. So yeah, it's posted about once a week, you know.
That's, it's really good.
Subscribe. It's called The Split.
Highly recommend. Yeah.
So
thank you.
Really good.
Before we end, I just got a fucking wild DM from someone who's like pretty trusted in the industry. And he says, I now have multiple direct sources who have been told 30% by Monday will be announced soon, and 100% by Monday is very possible. So if you're listening to this, I don't know, will we get this out today? Maybe.
What is 30% of what? 30% of deposits, gift cards,
of deposits made whole.
Oh, made whole. And
so 100% so there's already multiple, like there's already direct sources saying that like it's almost nearly guaranteed that depositors are going to be made whole by the.
Yeah. So my plan with this one is I'm going to take the Riverside raw file, which would be kind of yucky. And I'm going to download that. I'm going to post it immediately. And I'm going to send it to the editor and we'll replace the audio video with the edited stuff tomorrow. But because I think this is very topical, I'm planning for something in the next like 45 minutes. So.
Guys, I'm so fucking wired today. I've been staring at screens for the last 6 hours since all this went down. So I think I'm a little bit more like cocained out today than I normally am.
What? All right. Well, let's wrap it up here. Turner, love you, buddy. Thank you so much for just
on.
Being you and for showing up today.
Yeah, thank you.
Everything from the picture to your commentary, just top notch. So loved it.
Dealing with me.
Yeah, that was the worst part.